This is FM 100.5 and 101.9. AM 1450, Rutherford County's place to talk. WGNS, Murfreesboro, your good neighbor station. This is The Truman Show with Truman Jones. A look at the politics, news, sports, and people that are shaping Rutherford County. Now your host, Truman Jones.
Good afternoon, a great day, Thursday, and we want to let you know that this part of the show, the first part, is brought to you by At Home Care, and they're located at 237 Castlewood Drive, Suite H, right behind the Kroger's on Memorial Boulevard. And if you're having trouble taking care of all the normal functions, the duties, and all those things inside your home, and you feel like that you're not going to be able to stay there any longer, let me tell you, you have got a chance to stay there and really enjoy your life. All you have to do is give a call, 713-4639, 713-4639, or pull it up on the internet, www.athomecaretennessee.com. And what they do, they'll come into your house 24/7, take care of all those responsibilities for you, run errands. All you have to do is flip your remote on, enjoy your life, and really, you know, you've earned it. So you go ahead and stay there at your home and enjoy the things that you've always wanted to do. Okay, we have Mr. Nelson Smotherman on today, and I'm going to have John Hood's going to be on with us a little bit later, but he's over at Amazon. I think he's digging a hole over there. They're breaking ground. And, you know, John never misses those things. Brian leaves, we saw one of the best basketball games I've ever seen last night when the Raiders played over in Minnesota, or played here, and what a great crowd. Over 10,000 people, I think 10,500 and some extra ones on there. One of the greatest settings that anybody's ever seen here in Murfreesboro. It kind of remembered, it reminded me a little bit of the Tennessee Notre Dame that was played in NCAA sectionals. And I mean, the crowd was just absolutely phenomenal, and you can tell it really incited our basketball team because they really did play well last night.
It did, and that was a very, very good comparison of the crowd. I worked that game with Al McGuire and Dick Enberg on national TV.
Mm-hmm. And it was, I mean, it was unbelievable. You couldn't hear your neighbor next to you.
No, you
and
couldn't.
It was the same way last night. And Murfreesboro and MTSU can be very, very proud of what they did last night. I know that the nation was watching, and they really did honor this area, both MTSU and Murfreesboro. And the announcers were really very proud of this area last night.
That's for sure. It was a very good game, and I think that the people of Murfreesboro have a lot to look forward to, given the fact that we only lost two seniors last night. We've got just virtually like Rick, everybody coming back except one.
Well, you know, I know they were looking forward to going to New York, but Kermit Davis has a lot to be proud of. I mean, the coaches did an excellent job this year. The players were really, really great. It was, they did not lose last night for the lack of effort and for the lack of coaching. It was just one of those games that somebody had to lose it, and it just happened to be us. But as far as I'm concerned, both sides were winners last night.
That's true. It was a very, very close contest all the way. I don't think anybody had more than a 7-point lead, did he, anywhere.
There was never a let-up. I mean, as I was watching it, You keep thinking that there's going to be a lapse there somewhere, and then a team will get 10 or 15 points ahead when the other one try to kind of catch their breath a little bit and catch up. But that never happened. I mean, they were going 110% the whole game. I don't think I've ever seen a game like that before.
No, it was a very, very good game, we said. And I don't know. There was a little bit of laps there just once in a while that you could obviously see. But nothing that major, nothing that couldn't have been overcome. You had two real good teams going at each other, and whichever one I think had the ball the last couple of times down the stretch would have been the one who was going to win it.
You know, you hear coaches talk a lot about free throws, and they'll usually the conversation will come up when you get into tournament time. Free throws will either make you or break you, and it's been kind of our, I guess you might say, our Achilles heel all year would be the free throws. But, you know, that's something that can be overcome. And I think Kermit has really got some great players coming back. And I think he's looking forward to next season already. Of course, he's probably out recruiting right now.
Well, he should be looking forward to next season of what he's got coming back.
Now, we were going to talk about someone who very dear to all of us, that's been in this community any length of time, as far as sports is concerned, is Mr. Ray Duffy. But before we get into that, and that's another reason that John is coming over, because he worked with Ray for some time, just as you did, Nelson. You were telling me something before we went on the air that actually just blew me away, is that there are teams outside the state of Tennessee that actually play for the TSSAA. And I had never heard that. And of course, Brian was already knew it. I guess maybe I'm the last to know. But how in the world do they qualify to play in the Tennessee divisions when they actually live, say, in Mississippi? I think that's where you said the team actually exists.
One thing is that they're only located like about 2 miles over in Mississippi. Mm-hmm. They were located in Memphis before they moved over there. Mm-hmm. They play, as I said, about 98% of their schedule is Tennessee games, Tennessee teams. Mm-hmm. And this, because of the TSSAA rules that they have in place, is what allows them to play TSSAA ball and be a member of the TSSAA.
That's amazing, because I have never heard of that. And you were also telling me about there's actually been players that lived outside of counties in the state that actually played here for teams. Now, how did they qualify for that? And you're talking about the Loretta girls in particular.
Well, there again, they only lived, as I understood it, a couple of miles across the border. Mm-hmm. And the Tennessee school was closer to them by a long shot than their closest school in Alabama would let them qualify. I do know that there have been, and probably still is, around the Chattanooga area, people that lived in Rossville, Georgia, that went to school in Chattanooga because it was much closer.
Hmm. So there, I don't remember. Have there actually been teams that have made it to the championship level that actually were not in the state of Tennessee? Because, you know, it's always a bragging point to have your team that's in your county or in your city or whatever to make it to the championships. But when you have somebody that's outside the state of Tennessee, has there ever been anybody that actually made it to that level?
Just this one school that we were talking about. They've made it in two different sports, and I think one of them was football, if I'm not badly mistaken. Uh-huh. And seemed like one of them was maybe one of the track events.
Now, they're actually in the Memphis area, aren't they?
They play in the Memphis area, in a Memphis district down there.
So that may be part of it, because of traveling and everything. I imagine most of the teams they play are pretty much pretty close to them in that same area. And you're talking about Memphis.
Well, that's why they were able to apply for membership in the TSSAA, because that rule that they have, in fact, like I said, they play 98% of their schedule, is Tennessee teams.
Now, when we talk about sports and talk about individuals, we can talk about Grantland Rice and all the great Pete writers that covered sports, but I can't think of any name that comes up more prominent, especially in this area, than Ray Duffy. But Ray was not actually originated. He did not originate from Rutherford County. He actually came from Boston, if I'm not mistaken, or that area.
He was from Attleboro, Massachusetts, which is about 30 miles south of Boston.
Uh-huh. Now, tell me a little bit about Ray growing up and a little bit how he ended up here.
Well, growing up, he was quite an athlete himself. All, in fact, he and all of his brothers, he had three brothers, Matt, Francis, and Johnny. Mm-hmm. And they were all baseball players. And, in fact, one player that person that Ray played against that I'm aware of, and that was how he got the interview that he got with him on WGNS, and that was Rocky Marciano.
Oh, my goodness.
Rocky was a catcher for Brockton, Massachusetts High School.
And a great catcher. He,
right.
If I remember right, reading some of the stories on him, he really loved baseball more than anything. He wanted to be a Major League Baseball player.
Well, I'm not aware of that as much as I was his boxing skills. And then Ray, by the way, took me over to see the high school and the field that was named for him while we were up there. That field, this Truman is going to be hard to believe, but it's true. At that time, and this was in the 80s, the enrollment in that high school was 7,000.
Wow.
I told Ray at the time.
You think ours are big?
I told Ray at the time, I said, if I was principal of this school, coach would be fired every year if he wasn't in the state tournament in every sport.
Oh, my goodness.
You didn't have that much to pick from.
They say that Rocky Marciano was one of those people, he wasn't going to lose no matter what it was he was playing. And they say that he really did have great baseball skills. But something happened to him, and he was one of these people that, he wanted to succeed in something, and he found out that he had a talent in fighting and boxing. And as far as I know, right now, he still may be the only undefeated heavyweight champion that has ever fought there. I may be wrong, but I think he's still the only undefeated champion.
I kind of think you're right on that. But anyway, we said we're talking about Ray.
Mm-hmm.
Coming up, then when he after he got out of high school, and by the way, interestingly enough, he went to Attleboro High School. Their nickname, I know of no other in the United States, their nickname is the Bombardiers.
The Bombardiers.
And the school is still there, still in existence. Anyway, he went in service, and while he was in there, of course, he played baseball in service, and he was the one that wrote up the games, so he was involved in sports long before he got here. But anyway, after he got out of service, then he decided he wanted to become a priest. So he goes to the University of Notre Dame to Holy Cross Seminary. And as I understand it, he stayed there about 2 years. They moved the seminary from Notre Dame to Washington, D.C., so he goes over there, and Ray told me that he did do one mass while he was in the seminary. Mm-hmm. He decided after he got over there that it wasn't for him and went back home. Well, while he was in service and writing up sports and all, he met Joe Cronin and got to know him real well.
Wow.
And so he was going up hanging around quite a bit at Fenway Park. Mm-hmm. I have a great picture of him and Ted Williams in the dugout at Fenway Park.
I've got to see that picture.
I have another one. It shows him down behind the batting cage with a bat in his hand. Mm-hmm. But then anyway, he decided he wanted to go to radio school, and Joe Cronin himself wrote the letter that got him into the radio school.
That's amazing.
And that was in Washington, D.C.
That's amazing.
While he was in the radio school, he worked in a restaurant up there. And after he graduated from radio school, Cecil Elrod, who was the first owner of the station, was up there looking to hire somebody. And that's who he hired, was Ray Duffy and also a woman from Richmond, Indiana, where my uncle lived. And he brought him down here. He started out doing news, playing records. And
that was over at the old French shop.
Upstairs of the French shop.
On Square.
What actually got him into doing sports, our first sports announcer, who was Buck Byram.
I don't remember.
He was only here a couple of years.
Okay.
Had a daughter that was like about 10 years old, I think, and she got raped. He decided to move south of here. And so Cecil Elrod called Ray and said, "Ray, can you do sports?" And Ray said, "Yes, I can." And of course, the rest is history.
He's made for it.
He just stepped right into it. And the funniest story that comes out of him doing that was when he first game or two he was doing, Norris Lovering happened to tune into it. And he swore he took his radio to shop thinking something wrong with it because of Ray's accent and all.
It wasn't just his accent, which was, it was very prominent. But the thing about Ray is he got so involved in whatever game was going on that he was more a spectator a lot of time than he was an announcer. I mean, I would listen to him and I would try to find out what was going on, but I was having so much fun with it because he was having so much fun. I mean, it was, he was really just special. And you could tell he loved the kids here.
And John, of course, went with us. We had three of us. And the reason John Hood was with us, he was the technician and the color man. So you had to have somebody operate. Didn't take just one piece of equipment like you can do now.
Right.
You had two pieces of equipment. And so somebody had to operate the other piece of equipment, and that was John's job along with doing color. Of course, I was doing stats after. I rode with him the first year after I met him. Started doing stats with him the next year.
John Hood is one of the brightest people I know because he never forgets anything. He never forgets a name. And you can tell that he is always technically involved in everything that he does. And you can't find a better manager. And you also can't find anybody better than John to represent Rutherford County. But to have you and John Hood and Mr. Ray Duffy all together, you know, that had to be something special. Now, I can't call you guys the Three Stooges, but but you were really, really a team. You really were a great team, and I can remember a lot of that. And you did a lot of the stuff in the background, keeping up with everything, but you guys covered every basis by your special talents back then.
Oh, we did.
Now, do you think that Brian Barrett was taught any of John Hood's skills? Because, you know, Brian is our technical man here. He does sports. He's kind of a junior John Hood in a little bit.
Well, I don't know that John ever worked with him because John been gone here so long since before Brian ever came in here.
Yeah, he's multi-talented. He can do anything.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, Mr. Duffy, I know he loved baseball, and I know he loved basketball, but there was something special about lifting to Ray Duffy called football games. I mean, he never stopped. And, you know, there was pauses in football where you have to go huddle, the play's over with, the whistle's blown. He never stopped.
No, he didn't.
Now, did you work with him on most of his games on the air?
I was stat man all the way with him, except, of course, the first year. I believe he started doing it in fall of 48.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, I didn't start with him until 50. I rode with him in 49, started with him in 50. But he was as good as I worked with, except Monty Hill. Of course, he was big time, really big time.
Yeah, he was.
But people may not remember, but after 1955, after we went down and did the state tournament in Memphis when Central was in it, Ray decided he wanted to go back home. And so he
had been here how long at that time?
About 6 years.
And he wanted to go back home.
And he decided he wanted to go back to Massachusetts. Well, he goes back within a month. WMTS radio, Virgil Trim, called him and asked him to come back, come to work for them, and he did.
I thought WGNS was the only radio station that's ever been
here. He worked for WMTS too, because it's kind of an interesting thing happened. Now, when I was in service, 1 year, I did 7 of the 10 football games. I took off on Friday afternoon, hopped on the bus, rode into Nashville, took another bus up to Clarksville. I walked up the gate and asked the guy on the gate if the radio station in Murfreesboro was there yet. He said, well, which one? I think you're two here, because I'd forgotten that we had two of them. Mm-hmm. And he says, when he said they were both there, I'm just joking with him. I said, well, it didn't make a difference. I'm going to do stats for both of them. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what happened. WMTS, and I believe it was, WGNS, and I think it was Hal Christensen.
I remember him. Yeah.
Didn't have a stat man with him, so I sat between he and Ray. Ray was doing it for WMTS and fed both of them.
Wow. Did both of them pay you?
You know the only time I ever got paid for doing a game, and this is the truth, I got $75 a game for the two games I did with Al and Dick on national TV.
Wow.
And It's all been voluntary.
And it's such an important job. It really is, because they really can't keep up with everything unless they got that in front of them, and they've got you to do it. Of course, they're busy watching the game and trying to relate it back to the audience. But what you did, what you have done, is really remarkable as far as I'm concerned, because you've given all your time. You have to really, really love sports to get involved like you have.
You do. You wouldn't have stayed in it 60 years.
That's unbelievable. And, of course, you had a brother that was a great athlete that played for Murfreesboro Central, Bill. And I have seen him play. He was a great guard.
He was a good end on the football team, too.
Yeah. Now, I never saw him play football. For some reason, I missed out on that.
Bobby Dog.
Yeah. So, 60 years that you've been keeping stats, and that's one of the reasons why right now, that you're the authority for the TSSAA on all the stats and all the games that have been played, I guess, since the beginning of high school.
Well, as far as the tournament's concerned, yes, like we were talking about when I was up here with the basketball stuff, I've got the boys' brackets, all the scores from 1921 to date, and the girls 22 through 28, and it stopped, came back in 58, and I got all the way up.
Now tell me about some of these trips that you and Ray and John used to take from game to game. That had to have been interesting, because you spent a lot of time together.
You know, the one trip that stands out more in my mind than any other one, for a simple reason. We went to Columbia one night to do a football game. But to get in that press box, you climbed a ladder straight up the side of that press box.
You gotta be kidding.
No. I had the big amplifier, the biggest piece, with me. I was carrying it up. It was in a box. When I got to the top of those steps, and Ray was right behind me, when I got to the top of that ladder, went to pick it up, to slide it in on the floor, the bottom fell out. That piece of equipment goes flying back down through there. Some way, Ray grabbed that thing with a handle, and that's all that saved us not being on the air that night. We were able to get on because he didn't let go of it, didn't drop it. It didn't jerk him off the ladder.
You look at all the plush places that you can go in and announce from now.
Oh, yeah.
And back then, a lot of those places were nothing but shells. You had to go in and set up everything yourself.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you're talking about a task. I mean, they're just to be able to get it started and get it going where you can reach all the people. You guys really did set the trend for everything. You really did.
It was something, and you talk about that. Riverdale had to go to Chattanooga Red Bank to play a game. It had rained so bad that if they had done what they should have up there, and it was still raining, they would have moved that game over to the college field. That press box tournament was no bigger, I guess, than from where we're sitting right here, that wall back there, which would be what, 10, 12 feet?
Right.
And about across here. You couldn't get just their local station in there, in other words. We sat on the top on the roof in the rain to do that ball game. I couldn't do stats because you can't write on wet paper.
What was the hardest place to go to where you probably had more anti-Murfreesboro feeling than any other place? When you would go announce a game, whether it be football, basketball, or whatever?
It probably would have been Clarksville.
There was an intense rivalry.
Tremendous rivalry with them.
Yeah. The Rotten Apple game.
Yeah.
And I remember playing in that game, and there was no love between Clarksville and Murfreesboro at that time. Absolutely. But, you know, we had a number of cities that had high schools that were pretty tough rivals over the years. And that's one thing I really do miss is seeing the Clarksville game. The Gallatin game was always tough. We played, I remember playing DuPont, and you wouldn't think of DuPont even having a high school now, but they were pretty tough back then. And it's been a lot of changes. There's a lot of high schools that have come and gone, which is always sad for me because there's some great memories in the rivalries of those schools.
Yeah, you mentioned DuPont. Makes me remember that game. If I remember correctly, and I was doing stats on that game, DuPont only had 3 fouls called on them in the entire game.
Mm.
And we had like 15 or 20 at least, if not more. You can imagine what we were putting up with.
Was that some home cooking?
Home cooking big time.
We want to let you know that this part of the show is brought to you by the Gold and Coin Connection, and they're located at 2568 South Church Street, and that's beside the Gateway Tire Center in the Strip Mall. And they also have another location at 5631 New Nashville Highway. And Pastor Larry Dunn of ERO Ministries and his partners Chris Chico and Wayne Eberly, they buy scrap gold, jewelry, platinum, coins, and silverware. And for a fair and honest evaluation of your collectibles, take them by and see Pastor Larry Dunn and his partners today at the Golden Coin Connection at 2568 South Church Street or 5631 New Nashville Highway. And they have some of the best sports collectibles that you've ever seen. And if you're a great sports fan, go by there and give them a call at 890-2646.
Are you driving around in a state of doubt, wondering how your car insurance will really take care of you? I'm State Farm Agent Monty King. Let me get you to a better state, a state of confidence that the coverage you're driving around with is actually driven by your wants and your needs. That's why 97% of the people who've had claims with State Farm would recommend us, without a doubt. Give me a call at 220-2210. You'll see how easy and affordable it can be.
Get to a better state, State Farm.
I'm State Farm Agent Monty King in Smyrna. Give me a call at 220-2210.
Murfreesboro Medical Clinic is more than just a clinic. It's the doctors you can trust, a technician you can believe in, and a staff member who goes the extra mile. From the time someone walks in our doors, the difference becomes evident. All of our resources are used to improve the healthcare experience of our patients, and we have been a part of Rutherford and surrounding counties for over 60 years. Murfreesboro Medical Clinic.
Murfreesboro Medical Clinic.
This is Good Neighbor Events, brought to you by the Omni Hut Restaurant in Smyrna, AmeriCare Pest Control, and the Rutherford Home Show, Saturday mornings at 11:30 on WGNS.
I've got pests.
AmeriCare is Rutherford County's number one choice in pest control, and it's simple to see why. After calling 893-7111, their staff came to my house 8 years ago when I had an insect problem. They looked at the situation, showed me the areas, and what they'd recommend to resolve the problem. After treatment and with quarterly checks, I'm bug, critter, and creepy crawly free. Thanks, AmeriCare.
Call the best of the best to get rid of your pest.
AmeriCare, 893-7111.
On the WGNS Good Neighbor Events, we find that the Murfreesboro Rotary Club is having a four-way test speech contest. That's going to be 4:30 on Thursday afternoon, March 29th, at the Boys and Girls Club. Now, this is open to any high school student here in Rutherford County. Doesn't matter whether you go to public school, private school, or if you're homeschooled. It's free to enter, and your 4 to 6 minute talk is all about Rotary's four-way test. You do have to enter, though. There are cash prizes, plus you might win a $1,000 college scholarship. Once again, the Murfreesboro Rotary Club's four-way test speech contest is Thursday, March 29th at 4:30 in the afternoon at the Boys and Girls Club. Call the Boys and Girls Club and talk with Jenny Wright for more information. And on Saturday, March the 31st, from 8 in the morning until 11, it's an oil-based paint collection, and that'll be at 1140 Haley Road. Again, that's oil-based paint only. Saturday, March 31st from 8 to 11 at 1140 Haley Road. Also Saturday, March 31st, volunteers are needed to help clean the Stones River Battlefield. That date is also the Girl Scouts' 100th anniversary. And those are Good Neighbor events.
We make important choices in our lives every day. You owe it to yourself to make an informed decision about where to receive cancer treatment. The Cancer Center at Middle Tennessee Medical Center offers the area's only accredited program. That means it meets the high standards set by the Commission on Cancer. We consider it a blessing to provide you with the very best care available. To locate an MTMC physician, call 284-LIFE. Why choose any place else?
Show now continues on the voice of Rutherford County, WGNS AM and FM.
Well, Brian just got a call, Nelson, that John Hood's on the way. So all the ceremonies must have broken up, and now we're going to have his magical voice on here with us. Now, you were talking about something that's real interesting while Brian and you and I were talking. You have actually been to broadcast at a place where they wouldn't let you broadcast. And I never thought that that would ever happen because, it's such a big thing for everybody to be able to listen to something that's going on, especially in high school sports, that really relates back to the cities and the counties.
Well, you wouldn't thought about it, but the way we found out about it, over 11 and Ravenshill went over to do a game, and the field at that time was not at the school, it was a private owned field. And they wouldn't let you come in and broadcast the games.
Wow.
Then later on, both instances I'm going to relate happened with Monty. We were set up to do the game, Murfreesboro Central Manchester game. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't let you broadcast up there unless it was a district game. We were going to send reels back and forth. Mm-hmm. I mean, not reels, but, we'll yell reel of tape. We're going to tape it up there and send them back after every quarter. They wouldn't even let us delay it. Come find out, WMTS takes the feed off of the Manchester station. And so after Bill and Monty went back up there, they came back with the right to broadcast and then on. But there's another funny story. We would go into Coffee County. Mm-hmm. Not Coffee County, I'm sorry, White County, which we called Sparta back then.
Right.
We went in, broadcast the games live. Their station taped the games and played them back the next morning.
Wow. Now, I never would have thought of that back then, actually taping a game to be played back. Actually, you guys taped some games. And I remember back when Mr. Duffy was calling the games that I don't know how they did it, but they taped the game, and the football players could listen to it the next morning and hear their names called out and whatever. It's kind of fun. You like to listen to those things when you're a part of it.
Yeah, you can do that right here, Thurman, right off there. But it's things like this that you run into. What called that to my attention that made me realize that they were taping?
Uh-huh.
We were down. Central was down to Sparta.
That's unusual.
Fourth down. Mm-hmm. We're going for it on fourth down. Mm-hmm. Keep the ball moving. Try to keep the ball. The Sparta station took time out for a commercial. Of course, when you think about it, when you realize that they were taping, it didn't make that much difference. At first, I thought, what in the heck is he doing?
So what happened?
Well, we won the game.
Oh.
We pulled it out.
Now, how did they cover the game while they were taping over at that time? Were they still calling the game at the time, but yet taping at the same time? How did they do that?
Well, we did the game live. Uh-huh. They were taping the game back at the station to play it back on Sparta station the next day.
Right.
They had their own radio station, but they weren't doing the games live.
Now, when Ray Duffy was calling, say, a football game, and somebody breaks loose for Central, how would he call that? Because, the famous John Ward would go, he's at the 50, the 45, the 40, the 35. Probably he's already scored by the time he says the 35, but he continues on to the to the end zone. How did Ray call those?
You know, it's been so long since I've heard him do a game that I really don't remember.
Oh, I can remember him, but I couldn't always. He was so excited, I couldn't always understand what was going on. But it was so much fun. And when Ray got ready to retire from radio, was Monty calling at that time, or how did that gap go between Ray and Monty?
No, and the reason that Ray got out of radio, he stayed in it until 1958 when he came back here, late March of 58,
uh-huh.
And was offered the recreation job.
Uh-huh.
And the next announcer was Dick Davis, who later left and went to after the sixth season, he left.
With Channel 5.
Went to Channel 5. Mm-hmm. That's when Monty came in.
Okay.
Well, actually, the next announcer. No, that was off of WMTS where mm-hmm. Dick was, and he was the next one place. Then Monty came in here. No, wait a minute. Dick Davis came up here after Ray left here. How? Dave Overton.
Dave Overton?
He not the one in Nashville. One okay. who lived in Chattanooga, but he did some too. Hal Christensen.
What about John Hood? Where did John Hood figure in all this?
Well, like I say, he was back doing the...
That predates all of what you're talking about now.
Yeah, it does, because you were doing the...
That's John Hood with us now.
Taking care of the big piece of equipment there at the ball games.
Couple of alterations. Talking about going to Lebanon to broadcast the football game. You were talking about Monty, I heard in the car coming in. But early on, I can't remember his name, and probably just what I can't. The principal over there would not approve the games to be broadcast live, because he felt like people would stay at home and wouldn't buy tickets and would cut down on the gate.
Uh-huh.
So when as long as he was principal at Lebanon High School, when we were working the ball games, he wouldn't allow you to come broadcast live.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and people have argued that over the years that. Well, whatever. Even some of the telecasts could not be televised locally unless it was a sellout. The same principle applies. Yeah.
But you couldn't see the benefits of what was going on with the telecast.
Not.
That's amazing.
Another thing about the Sparta thing, the Sparta station was daytime. That's the reason they were taping the broadcast.
Oh, okay.
They were a daytime station and were not on the air live at night, just like WMTS was at the time.
Yeah.
And that's what we did at WMTS. We taped the games and played them back the next morning. When MTSU played Presbyterian in the Tangerine Bowl,
mm-hmm.
What, 1960 was it? Lose track of my years, Nelson.
59 or 60, yeah.
Well, because it was in, no. Yeah, I guess it was. I'm thinking something.
In Orlando, we had to tape that and to send it back to be played on the next morning, which I guess was Saturday. I don't remember if it was a Friday night or a Saturday game. So what we had done, it's getting a little bit off of the track you're on, I guess. But in broadcasting the game, I went by to check or call the sheriff's office. I said, any way that I could get an escort to get me out to the airport, the terminal, to get on that last flight back to Nashville so the tapes would be back here for the next morning? Well, I didn't get any response at all. So we had to broadcast Nelson on the top of the press box there that night. Didn't have room in the press box for us, so we had to be on the roof. And we got about ready to broadcast, and I looked back across the field, and there was a sheriff's deputy driving up. He came, climbed up the ladder, and he said, when you get ready, I'll be right here in the car ready for you to take you to the airport.
Do you remember who the deputy was?
No, this is Orlando, Florida.
Oh, okay.
Orlando, Florida.
Wow, that's pretty neat.
And it really was. So as soon as that game was over, and you have never seen so many times to stop the clock, timeouts, everything in the world to make it late and late and late, because we had that last flight. So I got in the car. I don't know how fast he drove. Took me to the airport. I remember we got to the airport. There was a traffic light. We had to turn right, but there were about three lanes of traffic. I remember we came all the way out to the left of them, turned right in front of them, and just as we went into the driveway to the airport, I heard the sounds of mighty engines roaring, and that plane took off.
Bless your heart.
It was that close. But anyway, it was a great experience.
Now, who were you with at the time?
That was WMTS.
Okay.
I worked WGNS from 48 to 54, six mm-hmm. years, went in the service. Army from 54 to 56, and then back to WMTS from 1956 to 60. But you had certain stations on the lower your frequency, the farther your signal goes out. So therefore, they protected the frequencies. There'd be a station in Murfreesboro on 860. Mm-hmm. There was a station in Alabama. I can't remember the name of the town. It wasn't Decatur. It was on that same frequency. So we couldn't be on at night to protect them so their signal would get out. So you only had data from sunrise to sunset, they called it. And it varied from season to season, depending on sunrise and sunset.
Do you remember the first time that you met Ray Duffy?
Yes and no. I remember Cecil Elrod went to Washington, D.C., to the Capitol, I'm confusing with CREI, Capital Radio Engineering Institute, to the Capitol Broadcasting Company, I believe it was, mm-hmm. looking for hiring some staff. He hired Doris Winters. You remember Doris Nelson, who has handled traffic for us. Mm-hmm. And I think he hired an engineer, and I can't remember the engineer's name, but more specifically, he hired a Yankee from Boston by the name of Ray Duffy, Raymond Lawrence Patrick Duffy. And we thought, what in the world has Cecil Elrod done now? Brought this guy in here. We can't even...
A retired priest before he became a priest.
Well, not quite. we hardly can even understand the guy. How wrong we were. How he got into the hearts of Murfreesboro and Rutherford County, Nelson's and mine in particular, and what a great friend he became to us personally as well as the community.
Y'all were blessed to have the relationships y'all had back then.
We were. So Ray came in, and he did play-by-play. I did the color and the commercials, and then Nelson did the statistics. And Aubrey Weatherly at the time helped us on statistics, too. You remember Aubrey?
Oh, I remember well. I remember growing up at that time. I was just a young
just
kid.
Just a child, I understand.
When you first started broadcasting. We have a phone call on the line.
You mentioned about Ray calling a touchdown. I can remember one phrase he had was, "Hold on to your hats, Grandma."
Right. Okay, caller, welcome aboard with Nelson Smotherman and John Hood.
Hey, John.
Hey, good morning or good afternoon.
Look, clear me up on something. I remember this distinctly, and I don't think I'm wrong. Going back to the Tangerine Bowl, I was living in Shelbyville at the time. You may know who this is. Don't identify me. But anyway, if I'm not mistaken, Hudley Crockett broadcast that.
You didn't come out of Tullahoma, did you?
You didn't come out of Tullahoma, did you? He didn't have a color guy or nothing, and he talked the whole time. Now, am I confused, or is that correct?
That Hudley Crockett was doing the broadcast for WSIX?
I don't know. That's what you got to talk about. I don't know what station I would have been on.
It seems like he was. Was he at WSIX at the time?
He was at WSIX.
It could have been J.O., and I'm sorry, I don't remember for sure.
Well, the thing that always amused me was the fact that he didn't have a color guy, nothing, and the poor guy talked
the whole
2 hours or whatever it was.
Yeah, he was by
commercials
himself.
Commercials and everything. This
was good.
Been about 1960 or something like that.
Yeah, that's about the time of the Tangerine Bowl. We played, I believe, twice. We played Presbyterian.
And but it's a night to beat Presbyterian the first time.
All right,
and I'm sure when Hudley Crockett had been with him about that time, I guess he
could have been. If whether he was there or not, I don't have any recollection. We didn't get in the press box; it wasn't room for us.
Well, okay, I tuned in this good late point. Today. I got here late, and I just wanted to be sure. But that is possible that I'm not.
No, that's when Hudley was in his prime as far as being on the air.
Okay,
right.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, John.
Yeah, thank you for calling. I remember. Johnny Moore, who coached golf at MTSU more recently, was going with confused who it was. Anyway, I remember Governor Ellington was governor at the time. I remember Governor Ellington being there with his wife and everything, watching that game because he was governor of the state at the time. And of course, he had his son and his daughter both went to MTSU.
Yeah, Ann, I believe her
name. Ann, right.
Ann.
Ann and John.
Now, there was a little bit of repercussion off of that Tangerine Bowl. Do you remember when Tennessee Tech played MTSC at over here at the gym? And
basketball you're talking
at
about?
At halftime when all the rotten tangerines started flying from one side to the other.
Some students went out at halftime and bought tangerines, I believe, and came back in the second half and tossed them, right.
Yeah. And they were a little bit too ripe, if I remember, because I think I was the recipient of one of them.
Could have been.
But can you imagine the, I guess it was more of a riot afterwards.
Some arrests were made, but
there's a lot of arrests. But the fun thing about it was, it was all because of the school spirit. There was so much rivalry there.
We had that last night. in Murphy Center
yes.
with the game with Minnesota. It was back the old days when we used to play Tech and Austin Peay and had the OVC rivalries. We had that same crowd, that same feeling, that same enthusiasm that we had. And it's coming back. And it's just wonderful. It was a great night last night.
It was not such a great turnout from the city and the people that live here and the alumni. There was also a great turnout from the students. And in fact, it was the largest group of students that I've seen in a long, long time.
Last night, yes.
Yeah, yeah, it was.
It was.
And let's hope it ignites the crowds from now on, because it's really special when that shows up.
Is.
And MTSU could really benefit, and so could the city of Murfreesboro, if everybody would just take part like they should take part.
Oh, I think so. What a great season for Kermit and the guys, and a real tribute to them. Hate to lose last night, but they gave their all. They played every minute of the game, and it was just one of those great nights.
Best game I've seen, and I don't know when.
I think everybody's saying that today.
Now, how do you think Mr. Duffy would have done calling that game?
Oh, Ray would. He would have been in his element. He would have been swishing all night long. There weren't enough swishies, as a matter of fact.
Was he the one that first came up with the term swish?
First time I ever heard. That's when it rips the net, doesn't hit the rim at all. No backboard, no rim, right through the net, and swish. Yeah. That was Ray Duffy was known as swish.
In fact, a lot of times I had rather listen to a really good radio announcer than watch the game.
Well,
and listening to him, it really was special.
A good announcer can really set the scene and make you not worry about not being there. Larry Munson was great on baseball in that regard. When they used to do recreations, you remember that? With the Nashville Vols. They didn't travel with the team, but they had a teletype operator at the ball game, and he sent it by teletype and came off on a tape. Then he had a sound effects engineer with him, and he created all the sound effects. He'd create when the bat hit the ball.
You have got to be. You have just busted my bubble.
WKDA, that was maybe even greater talent to be able to do that, to make you think you at the ball game.
You know, I hope this wasn't everywhere, because I used to listen to the game of the day. You probably remember.
It may not have been going then.
Mel Allen was the announcer for the New York Yankees.
Right.
And Mickey Mantle would get up, and I would listen to the game, and of course I was always hoping Mickey would hit a home run.
Oh, absolutely.
And you could hear that sound of the bat hitting the ball, and you could tell whether it was going to be a homer or not. Now, don't tell me they were setting us up for this.
Many occasions they didn't travel with the team, would do out-of-town games that way, and would do the home games live, of course. I used to know the name of the engineer who worked for Larry Munson. His sister lived in Murfreesboro, and her husband was the head of Bell South here, South Central Bell at the time. The name eludes me, but he was Munson's sound effects engineer, and he made you think you were at the ballgame, along with the way Larry would recreate it.
You guys were under a lot of pressure, all of you, because times were different.
Oh, yeah.
Larry Munson, as you know, made the mistake of saying a word he shouldn't have said.
I remember the Sunday afternoon.
Calling the game. Actually, it was supposed to have been a little break.
He had the mic off.
Right. Uh-huh. Now, what was it hard to call those games and getting so excited and know that, something may slip out?
Not really. I never did feel that way.
Well, of course, now Ray was a Yankee now. I mean.
Okay. And by the way, folks listening, we're not making any aspirations about him being a Yankee and us being Rebels. It was just a different time, and just became a great fellow, great part of us. Back in those days, I was remembering, I think it was, the station would charge $100 to sponsor a ball game.
Hmm.
And many times, Ray and myself or others, we'd go out and sell the game. $10 a sponsor, we get 10 sponsors at $10. Then we'd get in the car about 3:30 and drive to wherever the ball game was and broadcast the game.
Now, see, being so naive as I was, I thought you guys just showed up, you called the game, you knew the players. And as I was talking to Brian about this earlier, how in the world, like a football game, you keep up with all the players? There's 22 players going at one time and all kinds of things going on. How in the world, now, I know that Nelson's there keeping up with all the stats and all the players and where they're all going.
Well,
how
used to you'd have a spotter working with you, and he'll point them out to you and help you on keeping up with it. You do the best you can to do it yourself without that, but you got a spotter who will confirm everything.
Spotter helps on defense, okay? But at least the way that we do it now, we have someone who spots and tells
defense.
Yeah, you know, they help with the defense, and whoever's doing the play-by-play is following the offense.
Yeah.
So then you've got both sides covered.
Well, who's watching those poor tackles and guards and center? They're making those great blocks. I never hear you guys say anything
that's where
about
they...
that big hole that the the football that the fullback is running through. Or
that's where your color analyst comes in, and they watch the play, and then they kind of dissect. Well, that hole was opened up by the right guard who pulled to the right, or whatever.
So
I mean,
that's what kinda... you did, John.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
more or less. Yeah, some of it. Yeah. Well, we'd usually have somebody else to help as well. Nelson would help on that. I remember I mentioned Aubrey Weatherly a few minutes ago. Aubrey was the blind concessionaire in the courthouse. Great sports fan, particularly basketball. Mm-hmm. And he used to go with us when we would broadcast the tournaments. Usually, I guess it was the region, would be usually at Cookeville, wouldn't it, Nelson?
In Cookeville.
But it was the regional tournament.
Cookeville
MTSU. Yeah, right. But the regional, you know, we had the district. We had a unit at one time, then a regional. And Aubrey would go with us up there. He would always sit by us. And if we...
I have heard him mention things before.
Oh, yeah. If we'd lose track of things, we'd forget who made that last tackle. You know, we'd already called it, whatever. Mm-hmm. Who was it made that last tackle? Aubrey could tell you in a minute.
He was amazing.
Oh, he could recall. Yeah,
I mean Aubrey, you know he had been born blind. I think he had a little disease or something that happened to him when he was very very young.
I think that's right.
And then he had a sense that nobody else had. He could hear things and remember things that nobody else
that's
could.
True.
But did you guys used to pick him up at his home?
And when we would pick him. We would bring him back at his home. We'd get in midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning, to make it. It was dark. Making it was Aubrey. Get out of that car. Walk right straight to that sidewalk. Right to that front door, and right in
that's
the house.
That's what I was going to say.
Not miss a step.
I'd take him home before or after some event.
Yeah.
And he was one of the more fun guys to be with. He had a great sense of humor.
Yeah, he really was.
Tell me what actually happened to him when he was born. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to put something in the eyes, and the doctor put the wrong medicine in his eyes.
That's correct. I didn't want to elaborate. Yeah,
but they say I've been told people have seen him do it, that he'd go to the garage, get in the car, back it out, and drive it up in front of the house.
He had a car.
Yeah.
He did.
Had a wonderful wife. They were happily married for many years.
Really nice people. We want to let you, and speaking of cars, we want to let you know that this portion of the show is brought to you by Stan McNabb Automotive, where they provide quality vehicles from Chevrolet, Dodge, Jeep, Ford, and Cadillac to the Murfreesboro, McMinnville, and Shelbyville, Tennessee area. Their large selection ensures that they have a vehicle for everyone, no matter what it is you're looking for. And for a quality used car in Tullahoma, visit their dealership located at 2000 North Jackson Street. They have a large inventory of pre-owned cars, trucks, SUVs, and minivans to select from. At Stan McNabb Automotive, they pride themselves in the quality that they offer on all of their used cars, which makes them a major destination for used vehicles.
You mentioned about that.
Slick Pig Barbecue. Down on East Main, there's pork, beef, chicken, and wings. Sauce too good to be true.
Now at Slick Pig Barbecue, try the catfish special. Wednesday night between 4 and 8 o'clock, $9.99 plus tax for all-you-can-eat catfish. The meal includes hush puppies, white beans, and homemade coleslaw.
Slick Pig Barbecue, 1920 East Main.
Maybe your broker has given you the cold shoulder. At Edward Jones, the level of service we provide is based on your personal needs and preferences, not the size of your investment portfolio. This is Lee Colvin of Edward Jones, and whether you're starting an investment plan or have accumulated a sizable portfolio, I can help you. I provide highly individualized, face-to-face service to each investor. Call me today, Lee Colvin, at 907-7056. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
Hi, I'm Doran Claiborne with Farmer Brothers Insurance. Do you value life? Life insurance, that is. When you buy your life insurance from us through Auto Owners Insurance, we'll save you money with premium discounts on your car and homeowners coverage. We're specialists in insuring people and the things people own. Come to us about life. No problem life protection through Auto Owners Insurance. Give us a call at 893-5064.
You can depend on Farmer Brothers.
The local conversation continues now on The Truman Show. Once again, here's Truman Jones.
And welcome back with Nelson Smotherman and John Hood. We've got, how was the groundbreaking, John? I forgot.
Real good.
To ask.
Amazon had a great groundbreaking. What a great addition. 3,500 jobs they're bringing to Middle Tennessee.
Wow.
Be in operation in September. A million square feet under roof, and they're working night and day out there.
When are they going to start hiring?
I'm not sure on that. Didn't mention that specifically, yeah. But it'll be in operation September, so obviously before then. And someone from their marketing department will be in touch with you about a guest shot on
great.
Your program.
Oh, great. That'll be fun.
I gave them your number.
I enjoy that. I you probably remember the name Albert Ellison, don't you?
I do, yeah.
I know
what was it?
Nelson
what was his nickname?
Does.
He had a nickname, I believe. Go ahead.
But anyway, I was talking to Sam Stocker today, and I think Albert is his uncle, if I'm
that's
not
right.
mistaken.
I did not know that.
And I was talking to, and hopefully we're going to have Albert on here,
because
that's going to be an interesting story. I mean, we're talking about small communities just ruling in the sport of basketball, and I still wish it was that way. I wish that we would do away with all the classifications and just go back and let mono to mono, it doesn't matter where it's small or
whoever
large.
Play whoever.
Yeah, because, you know, it really does bring something special to the table, because you remember your Montgomerys and your Ellisons and your Foots Comptons and all those people that go back for years and how they were able to dominate against the big boys.
You mentioned
Foots
Comptons and Jimmy Montgomery.
Right.
One of the things that Ray did regularly was he was involved with the March of Dimes, Ray Duffy, mm-hmm. and he would put together a big March of Dimes game every year in January to raise money.
Wow.
And I remember having Kittrell and Central to play, which everybody wanted to happen, but just never did happen regularly.
Mm-hmm.
And the last time I believe they met Nelson, we played in Vanderbilt at Vanderbilt
right.
Gym. It got so big that nothing could handle it here. That was before Murphy Center. Had it at Vanderbilt on a January night. Real wintry night, and I remember I was working the PA, and so we called the Highway Patrol to find out about road conditions.
Mm-hmm.
They said, well, it's going to sleet and snow. You need to cancel the game, dismiss it, send everybody home. Well, last thing we were going to do was announce that, and the game went on and went on fine and had a great event. You mentioned about Ray being a retired priest.
Mm-hmm.
Ray had gone, I think all of his life he had wanted to get into the priesthood, very loyal and devoted Catholic. And went to seminary, went to Notre Dame to become a priest. Having been in World War II and served in the service and been around the world, so to speak,
mm-hmm.
I think things were just different at that time, and he decided it was probably not for him. Although he was not a cloaked priest, if you will, I'd say he was an unofficial priest as much as anybody ever was, as what a great Christian person he was. Taught me a lot about the Catholic Church. I'd never known anything other than it was a little building out on Lytle Street that was a Catholic church and learned a lot about it, going with him to midnight mass on Christmas and finding out about the religion, but more importantly found out about what a fine person he was, what a fine Christian he was.
It sounded like he was kind of a role model.
He really was.
We have numbers of role models as we meet in our life and our
he was very definitely one, and particularly working as a recreation director in his later years, what a role model he was for young people. 2004, I went to Boston for a little meeting up there, and while I was there, I drove down to Hebronville and to the town where he's buried. And I had the privilege and the honor of being a part of his memorial service here when he died, and I went to visit his gravesite up there and to say a final goodbye to Ray, and that was a very special moment for me, as he was a very special friend.
That had to be special. For some reason, I thought that Mr. Duffy had been buried here.
No.
I don't know why. But he spent a large part of his life here.
Oh, yes. Quite funny, if you came here to work, WGNS, we'd finish the ball season. Well, I'm going back home. Well, he'd go back home for a week or two, maybe a month. A few minutes, he'd call up, I'm coming back. He did that for Nelson how many years?
Oh, I don't know how many years after he retired from the recreation department.
I'll go back for a visit, but I mean he was going home. Enough of working out in another state, another part of the country. I'm going home.
Yeah.
But he'd go home and get homesick for us. And after a few years of that, he finally stayed and he became a permanent resident.
Well,
yeah.
When he died. Was he was here.
Oh, yes, he was here. Uh-huh. And, services were at St. Rose.
And then he wanted to go back home. I presume he already had his plot
Did Dennis Rainier go back with him for the burial up there?
I think he did.
I think Dennis went back with him. Dennis had worked with him in the recreation department, yeah.
I just wonder if wherever he lived in Massachusetts, Did they realize all the accomplishments that he had made here and how much he meant to this community?
Hard to know, but Hebronville, a small community outside of Attleboro, Massachusetts. Uh-huh. In fact, when I went up at the cemetery, I couldn't find his gravesite, and I finally got the gentleman in charge of the cemetery. Oh, yes, that's that little guy, the guy that they brought back from the South or something like that.
Isn't that something?
And he took me right over to it, you know.
That's amazing because...
Small cemetery, but still...
Been here, you know, you would still have people going by his gravesite because he meant so much to everybody here. But there, it's almost like he's kind of a nonsense.
Well, see, he'd been removed from there for many, many years, and other than family. In fact, I tried to find his nephew, and was it an uncle still living, a nephew anyway? And I had his number, I'd call him up, and when he'd answer, the phone would answer, and he'd say, hello, Fenway Park. And I thought I'd dialed the wrong number.
Uh-huh.
Well, coming back home, I talked to Dennis Reiner, and I found out that's the way he had his answering machine set up. I really had the right number, but I never did get to
talk to him. You're talking about fans, Boston Red Sox fans, and Notre Dame.
Notre Dame and Boston were two raised great loves after the church.
Well, I appreciate you guys being on. Nelson Smotherman, it's always great to have you, and John Hood.
I appreciate
you rushing back. I know you've been real busy, especially dealing with all these things that you're responsible for. But I appreciate you guys a whole lot, and I love to have you back on, and we'll find all kinds of subjects with you too.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to talk about our great friend Ray Duffy.
Oh, me too. And tomorrow we'll have Mr. John Blankenship on, and we will be discussing somewhat about the play that he's in. Actually, it's a musical, Camelot, and it's one of the best that I have ever seen. It's at Woodbury at the theater there in Cannon County. And it's on tomorrow night, and Saturday night will be the last two nights. And you can get there at 6 o'clock and enjoy some great food there, and then enjoy one of the best plays you've ever seen. And we'll see you guys tomorrow at 2 o'clock.